We're back talking some Cleveland Brownies football on Budweiser's From the Sidelines. It's presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. We welcome in longtime sportscaster John Telich to talk some Browns football. And oh, JT, how about those Cleveland Brownies? A little surprise upset victory this past Sunday, knocking off the San Francisco 49ers. How about that?
It was a lot of fun to see, and it was great to be able to enjoy a Sunday where – you know, a lot of things went your way, went the Browns' way. And Rocco, I really think, and it's so funny because before we started recording this, and it's late Wednesday morning, I was telling you that I was watching on social media these video of these fans between the Cowboys and the Chargers just beating the heck out of each other in the concourse at SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles, and thought it was so comical, but my long-winded answer to your opening question, it was, I thought the pregame fight between the Browns and the 49ers, it kind of set the tone for the day. You know, people wouldn't condone this sort of stuff, per se, but I just thought it was like the Browns had that mentality that they felt they were being disrespected on what the guys were doing to the DBs as they were going through their warm-ups early. And they let them know in no uncertain terms. And I thought that set the tone. And you obviously don't want to see that every week. And they're lucky there were no fines or ejections or whatever could come out of such a fracas. But it was good to see the Browns say, all right, not in our house. I thought that was cool.
Well, and one of the ways they set the tone following that little pregame skirmish was certainly with the defense, as they are playing at just, you know, literally historic levels right now. JT, how are they doing this?
Well, first of all, I think it started with bringing in Jim Schwartz, and then at the same time, they really addressed the areas that they felt they were deficient in. And they also got people healthy, like in the linebacking core. They got JOK back healthy. He missed some games last year. He comes back. Anthony Walker missed a lot of last year. He comes back. But they went out and got Dalvin Tomlinson and Shelby Harris. And, of course, they got Oboe, and they brought in Zadarius. And that whole core up front has that mentality. You know, Schwartz is basically a rush first and ask questions later kind of a guy. And it's easier to do that, I think, Rocco, when you have a real good core of defensive backs back there. And so, statistically speaking, this year, Schwartz is employing 71% of the time man-to-man coverage. And he's got Ward and Emerson, and he's got Newsom. He's got these guys that he really feels comfortable with. And they're also sewn together nicely on the back end of that with play from like Thornhill and Delpit, the safeties. Everybody is more in tune with what's going on with each other. And it's a very cohesive unit. But I think, Rocco, it really starts with those guys up front. You always win in offensive line and defensive line. And when you have a guy, and I remember Andrew Berry saying it wasn't necessarily size that he was going after when he went out and got someone like Tomlinson. He wanted power in the middle that could get to the quarterback, but obviously could handle themselves with the interior run defense. And they have just, the numbers are crazy. You said historic. You know, 1,002 yards given up in five games hasn't happened since like 1972. And can I remind our listeners, in 1972, you could basically put an offensive player in a straitjacket if you're, you know, you could do best, you could do anything, beat the heck out of them up and down the field. It was a lot different scenario how the defense was allowed to do things back then compared to how it is today in this quote-unquote passing league. So what they're doing in the yardage department, and obviously points allowed and what have you, the yardage thing is just crazy. It's absolutely crazy. But it's fun to see. And I'm really giving a long-winded answer, but I do want to bring up the point of how confident Schwartz has to be on some of these DBs. And one of the ones that he's really confident in is MJ Emerson, who got his first interception on Sunday. And he's, like, allowed only 30% completion rate on the man-to-man coverage guys that he's he's taken on. So I think it's been really impressive what they've done up and down that defense. And you know, you just shut down a team that was, you know, averaging 33 points per game. You had them 3-for-12 on third downs. It was just, it was really fun to see, and I think that defense can carry them a long, long way this year.
So obviously the defense has gotten a lot of love, even on a national level. I think a lot of, you know, the national media, quote-unquote, is starting to take notice of this Browns defense. But, JT, I'll tell you what, can the offense and Kevin Stefanski get a little bit of credit here as well? I mean, to be able to put up enough points to get the win against a talented 49ers defense, I think that says a lot about, you know, their ability to get things done with P.J. freaking Walker as your quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a curveball that was thrown at them 3 weeks ago or so when, you know, they found out that they thought that Deshaun was going to play, but he couldn't, and so they went to DTR. And that was not the scheme didn't seem to match the abilities of the young player. And, you know, not that PJ's had a million snaps as a starter, and not that he's a high-level backup. I'm just saying on Sunday, you know, he did as good a job as he could. He threw a couple of picks. We know that. And he also almost threw that interception into triple coverage when they were going down for the field goal to get the points to go ahead. But there were some instances there. The scheme that he came up with off of the Harrison Bryant, who normally would get that snap and would try to punch forward for a couple of yards, for him to pitch it to Kareem, that was a good play call, and certainly very fruitful because he scored a touchdown on that. There was the Njoku touchdown called back. I think that was the one play where Jedrick got off the line just a little bit too soon, and they got called for that. But I thought that was schemed up well. You had Goodwin on a bit of a run to the outside. That was fruitful. So I just thought, and again, and he took his field goals when he knew, because he had that defense playing against the 49ers, playing the 49ers offense like the 49ers offense wasn't San Francisco 49ers with the talent that they have. They did a great job on holding them down to what they held them down all day. And I think it allowed Kevin to coach in a slightly different manner. And He's taken a lot of fire, and there still were people I was listening to on Sports Talk Radio even Monday saying, you know, a lot of fans didn't want to enjoy this, and I thought, my goodness, you talk about wanting on your Rice Krispies. you know, you got to enjoy stuff when it's right there in front of you. You just beat the number one team in the league, and it doesn't matter how the game ended with a missed field goal, you won the game. And so enjoy that. But I think, you know, recent history in the last 23, 24 years is kind of conditioned fans to always be looking for a scapegoat when the slightest thing goes wrong. You're at 3-2, and you're ranked right now in the Athletics power rankings, number 7 in the league. Now, you don't want to own a stock like the Cleveland Browns as an investment, because you'll have heart attack every week, because last week they were 16th in the rankings and now they're 7th. And so you probably want them just to be consistently in the top 10 and take your chances in the playoffs.
Boy, a game of inches right there, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, man, field goal misses by a couple of feet to the right, and all of a sudden you move up, 10 spots in the power rankings? Boy, preached JT on the heart issues that this team could certainly cause you for any kind of long-term investment. So with the Indianapolis Colts, the next task for these Cleveland Browns, and the news just coming in on Wednesday, actually, that their quarterback, Anthony Richardson, done for the year. He's going to undergo season-ending shoulder surgery. So, you know, what's kind of the thoughts on this Colts team? They seem to be up and down. Obviously, losing Richardson's a big blow, but what are kind of the preliminary thoughts on that matchup Sunday?
Well, preliminarily, I want to see Joel Bitonio back this week. We also got news on Wednesday early in the day that Dunn is having been put on IR. So with his calf issue, he filled in for Joel. So the hope is that he will be back this week. And I think that's going to be another one of those day-to-day kind of media watches, Betonio watches, along with the Deshaun speculation, as it seems to be each and every week. But, you know, the Colts also lost a defensive lineman, lost to that's Grover Stewart. He was nabbed with the I think he's going to miss six games due to performance-enhancing drugs, you know, violating that provision in the contract. And they're coming off a loss to the Jags, did not look good at all. And, you know, Gardner Minshew had some moments when he was with the Jags as a backup guy, and, you know, he's done. But, you know, they're going to be scrambling this week. And I think going up against this historic defense, as we're calling the Browns, Garrett and company, they really I think this is a game where you play within yourself and you just let that let the defense continue to play together, play cohesive, and kick tail. And this can be a win for the Browns, even on the road, inside a building, and what have you. But this is clearly a very, very winnable game to go up, you know, 4-2 on the year. And you're probably sitting where you had thought you would be sitting, knowing that you came into the season, you're going to play three of your divisional foes in those first, you know, games of the year, first four or five games of the year, and you're in a division, getting back to those rankings by the Athletic, Rocco. The AFC North is sprinkled all through that top 13. You've got Cleveland at 7, Cincinnati at 10, Baltimore at 12, and the Steelers at 13. By far the most teams in the top 15. You know, in the league. So, you know, it's still a tough, hard-fought division that you've got to swim your way through to get to the diving board and get out of the water. But it's going to be their defense carrying them, as I mentioned before, and this week should be no exception.